in Yerushalayim and let the Kohen, you know, slaughter it and eat it over there. So that way, you know, there would be following up. Now, of course, if we're a Baal Mum, there's no question, but of course, you know, the Baal Mum, you know, if it has a blemish, then in that case, there's no question that the Bechor can be slaughtered anyway, okay? But the question is whether he would still carry it out, even though there's no Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, we said before, no such monkey business, right? But remember, he's arguing the point. He's saying, why not? Why can't we argue logically this point, right? So, Ikosavar, if he's of the opinion that Kedusha Rishena Kicho Lashato, that, you know, the first sanctification of the land is only for its own particular period, below Kicho Lashato, then Afila Bechor Namik, Tiboy. Then in that case, he still would ask the question about the Bechor. We haven't resolved that. Maybe then in that case, that the Bechor should be eaten, okay? So, in that case, in other words, it should be brought to Yerushalayim and still eat. Well, Omar Ravina, so Ravina said, Le'olam Kosova, it's true that he is of the opinion that Kicho Lashato, that, you know, Eretz Yisrael was sanctified for its own particular time, but like Kicho Lashid Lovli, but not for the future after it was destroyed. So, but guess what he says? Okay. I can think of a good case over here where.
Yeah.
And what is the good case? It says, Bahocha, you know, here I have a case, theoretical case, all right? Bivachor, we're dealing with the question of a Bachor, Shanizrak Domo Kodam Churban Habayis, the blood was sprinkled on the altar before the temple was destroyed, and then the next minute the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and it could no longer be eaten over there, right? Bachor of Habayis, right? But I am the Sorakayim. And in the meantime, the rest of the flesh is still there. So why can't the kind eat it, even though now the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed? Umak Shinon, it says, we make a comparison of the Sori Ledomek. We compare the eating, because it says, you know, that you have to eat, you know, the animal, you know, after you sprinkle the blood. So in other words, if you're going to eat it, first you have to sprinkle the blood. So in other words, the flesh of the animal is compared, you know, as part of the regulation to the sprinkling of the blood. So ma domabam is peyach, right? So just as the blood has to be sprinkled upon the altar, so af besorebam is peyach. Then in that case, we would say that the flesh too has to be, it requires the mizbeach. Now, if we say that the Mizbeach is destroyed, so how can you do it?
Can't eat it.
Okay. And he says, not only that, but he says, but the Makish Maser Bechor. We also made a comparison between Maser Sheni, right, to the Bechor. So, he asks the following question. He says, V'chi dover halomeh behekesh chozer melakit behekesh. Says, look, you learn, you have case A and case B, right? And you say, from what I see in case A, I thereby come to the deduction that this is true also for case B, okay? That's Dover Halomi, right? You know, we say in the Rabbi Yishmael, right? Dover Halomi din Yono, but Dover Halomi din Sofer. In other words, something that we learn either by whatever surrounds it, in other words, whatever the general discussion is, so give us an inkling as to what it is, or if we have all kinds of arguments going back and forth, then it's something that we learn only at the very end of the discussion, okay? So he says, all right, Makish Masibachor, he says, can we say that something that you learn simply by comparison, in other words, B from A, Chozer Mulamid Behekesh, or can we say then, if that's the case, then B will tell us what C should be? I mean, if we argue that there is a certain common denominator, right, then we should be able to say that the common denominator that we have in A is there in B, and therefore, if C has the same common denominator, then from B we could also learn, you know, C.
Right. You can build.
Yeah.
Can I offer off my
confinement? Of course you can, absolutely.
About the offering before the destruction and then the temple was destroyed.
Yes.
We learned that the 3 weeks prior to the destruction, the 70th of Tammuz, discontinued all of the offerings.
So not necessarily. They didn't. What happened was that you had street, hand-to-hand fighting, house-to-house, street-to-street, okay? But they tried as much as possible to carry on at least the sacrifice of the Tumidin in the Beis HaMikdash until finally the Romans destroyed it and it became impossible, of course, to do it. So it's not true, I mean, that for 3 weeks they'd already ceased. There are those who, you know, would say that. But historically, they tried right to the very end to carry on the service in the Beis HaMikdash. Because we find, for example, Gemara in Gittin, there's one chapter over there, Hanizokin, where among other things they have some of the various agodas concerning the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, okay? And they relate over there, you know, how the Kohanim were in the very midst of reciting the Shir Shel Yom at the time when the Romans came and finally destroyed it, okay? And what was the Shir Shel Yom that day? The answer is, it was the psalm that we recite on Wednesday. You know, Kel Kometz Hashem. This is what the Kohanim was saying at that particular moment of the destruction. And then they came down to the last pasuk of the psalm, right? Where it says,
Does this mean that Wednesday was
this is Wednesday,
yeah,
right? See, it's Wednesday. Okay, it's still Wednesday.
The
Chunaranim is already the next psalm. The Chunaranim is psalm, the beginning of psalm Tzadik Hei. This is the end of Tzadik Dalet.
Tishah B'Av was a Wednesday, is that?
Apparently, that was the Shir Shel Yom of that day because it's very significant.
Both days?
Okay, you know what the last pasuk says.
First or second temple?
Huh?
First or second?
Second temple. First temple doesn't mention. You have to realize, too,
they were both tragic events.
I'll come back to that in 1 second, okay? Let me just get the pasuk again. Sometimes my memory plays tricks on me. I must be getting older. Okay, the last pasuk says, right, Kikael Godola. Okay, by Yoshua the Himesayinam, right? By Hashem Lila Misko, by the Kaddish of Masi, right? That the Lord has been my stronghold, right? He is my shelter. By Yoshua the Himesayinam, and as a result, you know, God visited upon them punishment for their sin, right? Vrasom Yatsbi same, and He destroyed them for their wickedness. And then it says, Yatsbi same, Anishem Lekhaid, right? O Lord, O God, destroy them. Okay? So what they said is that they got as far as Rosom Yatsbi same with the Kohanim, the Levium, you know, that they got to that point where, you know, they said, you know, that God punished the wicked, you know, for their evil, of course, meaning in this case the enemy, the Romans, and so on. But the Kohanim were never able to finish the last three words. That's be same Adisham Lakitna. May God destroy them. At this point, this is when, you know, the destruction took place. Right, they were slaughtered. So that you see that they were trying to carry on the Avodas Beis HaMikdash, the service in the Beis HaMikdash right in the very last moment. It's another story told, you know, that the Kohanim, they said, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, here are the keys to the Beis HaMikdash. We tried to do our very best, we can't do any more. And they threw the keys up to heaven, and their heavenly voice snatched them. So, you know, they said, now it's up to you, Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Okay?
There were actually keys?
Yeah. There were keys, of course.
I mean, why would they lock it?
They locked it at night to make sure that no Gadovim came in.
Okay.
Okay.
wanted to make sure somebody...
Well,
look,
wasn't there someone on duty?
You have to realize, sure, the Levium had various jobs to do, okay? One of the jobs that they had to do is Mishmar. They had to be on guard. They were assigned to different gates for the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash had quite a few gates around it, okay? They had to have people on guard. They were stationed in order to protect the Beis HaMikdash, okay? To check people went in and out and things like that, and so to make sure that nobody would come in. So that was part of the job of being a Levi. Part of being a Levi in the Beis HaMikdash also meant, you know, that you remember, let's say, the choir, or you remember the orchestra over there, okay? Because in the Beis HaMikdash they did have musical instruments.
The cymbals, the trumpets, and so on.
Yeah. So yes.
I'm just trying to understand whose job was it to hold the keys? I mean, who was the shabbos there? I mean, was it the Kohen Gadol? I mean, who had the keys?
No, not the Kohen Gadol. You have... Okay. There is a Mishnah, a tractate, a Masechta in the Mishnah called Tomid. Okay? Which deals with the daily service. And then, right after it, is another one called Midos, which means literally measurements. Now, particularly in the Gemara, in the Mishnah Midos, there's no Gemara for it, but there's a Mishnah, okay? Mm-hmm. You have a physical description of the Beis HaMikdash. This room is here, this room is here, this room, so on and so forth. And also they have lists of the various jobs that were given to this Kohen, this Levi, that Levi, and so on and so forth.
And some of there is...
Yeah, because in other words, the Beis HaMikdash had its own Kahanim staff, its own Levium staff. And of course, in order to be able, you know, you had to prove that you had a good yichus and so on. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we learned last year in Tainus, if you remember, that at the same time, you had the ma'abodos and the mishmoros, right, they took turns, right. They had a week, a year, and then, repeated. There were 24 mishmoros.
24 mishmoros.
Right. So that twice a year they would go to the Beis HaMikdash. They had representatives.
Okay.
Well, listen, the basic...
Basically, that's
when they were sacrificing
the... I'm sorry, could I hear that again?
Yes. Cannibals.
Does it seem likely that in Yerushalayim, the Shem Rachmaniot were eating their children, and in the Beis HaMikdash they were sacrificing oblot on the Mizbeach?
Well, you asked a very good question. Of course, the business, you know, about the Doshim Rachmoniyos, this is in reference, of course, to Echo, which would apply really to the first Beis HaMikdash, okay? And at that time, I cannot tell you whether they did or not. The description that I was describing is really from the second Beis HaMikdash, okay? But we also know that part of the reason why Yerushalayim eventually fell, again, the same Gemara that I mentioned, you know, in Gittin over there, where they speak about Hanitzokin, there was a lot of food and drink and so on, storehouses in Yerushalayim, donated by the three richest inhabitants of Yerushalayim. But the zealots wanted an all-out war against the Romans. They did not want to surrender the city. Their motto was, we're going to fight to the very last man, but never yield to the Romans. And in order to build up, you know, the desperation among the people of Israel, they burnt these places. Jews were fighting Jews, unfortunately. Right. Well, okay, remember, as far as Josephus is concerned, he was writing from a political point of view. He wanted to show favor to Vespasian and to Titus. Titus was, of course, Vespasian's son. Right. Vespasian was appointed emperor towards the end of the siege of Rome, and then Titus succeeded him and conquered the city, and then eventually succeeded his father. And Josephus went to Rome as their protege. So naturally, from that point of view, he's trying to paint a very favorable picture of the Roman people. Just as Lahavdil again, I say Lahavdil for the simple reason that in some of other writings of Josephus, he presents a more balanced view, you know, of the Jewish religion, the beauties of it, various customs, history, and things like that, you see. But that particular episode, and, you know, that particular period, the fall of it, he presents from the point of view of trying to flatter the Romans. Okay? So don't go on that basis, because, as I said, Lahavdil, you have something like that in the New Testament. The New Testament comes down to the business about the trial of Yoshki and the crucifixion as being demanded by the Jews. They demanded it. The priests, the temple clergy, and so on, you know, they appealed, and the people said, you know, okay, let him be killed, let his blood be upon us, and so on and so forth. Obviously, this was written at a later time in order to throw the whole blame upon the Jews and to say that Pilate, you know, the Roman procurator, right, it was a mamzer, he washed his hands and says, see, I'm not guilty. It's they, the mob, they're the ones, the Jews, they wanted it. Okay,
yeah,
but the point is, it's
because it was a Friday before the Shabbos, for one thing, it was before the Passover, wasn't it? And it was impossible to, for the Sanhedrin to be convened at that time.
Correct. At least from the point of view of the Gemara and Sanhedrin, it would have been an impossibility, okay? Because the Gemara and Sanhedrin says that you do not start a trial on Friday, which would lead to dinin defoshes, because it's going to involve desecration of Shabbos. Same thing as far as the holiday is concerned, okay? So, from that point of view, there's no question. But I'm not stressing the point of view of the technicalities. I'm stressing the point of view that when people rewrite history, they do it from a tendentious point of view. They're out in order to show something, and therefore, facts, they don't count. It's what they write, and unfortunately people, once that they read this kind of tendentious literature, they accept it for truth. I mean, look what Goebbels and the other guys did, you know, with Germany over there. Take a look in our own day over here. I mean, we have plenty of publications in this country that also reflect a very tendentious point of view. I remarked to Anne before I left for shul tonight. We were listening to the news on Channel 22, you know, 6:30, the national news. You know how much time they gave to Bibi? I don't know if he got 20 seconds out there. This in spite of the fact that Congress applauded what he had to say and everything else. But obviously, they want to play down the whole idea, you know, because they were boosting Shimon Peres as the great savior, the peacemaker, etc., etc. And they're not happy with Bibi Netanyahu as a person who is willing to stand up for his own point of view and, you know, not simply bow down before President Clinton and Warren Christopher and the rest of that gang over there, or shake hands with Arafat and say, my buddy, my friend, and so on. All right, anyway, let's get down to the bottom of the page. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. So he asked a question, if you remember. Okay. Makish he says, so is there something that you learn simply by an analogy, by comparison? So can you say that then that's going to teach something else? Simply on the basis of comparison or the common denominator? You can't do it, because there are different things that apply. There are different rules that apply. And the rule that they're referring to over here, as Rashi points out, and as Gemara points out, is as follows. That if something is chulin, in other words, it's not sacred, then in that case it is possible to make some sort of a comparison. But if something is Kodesh, in other words, it has something to do with the Beis HaMikdash, with the sacrifice and so on, you cannot go on the basis of comparison and learn dinim. It has to be specified. in order to know, you know, what the proper position is. Okay? So he says, okay, he says, Maser Dogen Cholinu, right? Says that the tithing of grain, this in reality is Cholin, the tithe. But why is it Cholin? Because Maser, we said, I mean, it's holy in the aspect that it has to be eaten in Yerushalayim, right? But what happens if it's not the best quality? So in that case, it loses its Kedusha, right? Because you are Peda, you know, you redeem it for money, so that in that case, you say that the comparison maybe is not going to work over there. So he says, Honi cholamando omar bosalome das ninon, in accordance with the one who says that taka, when we make a comparison, we can learn B from A, in other words, right? So Ela Lamando Omar Bosa Malamidas Dinan. But in accordance with the person who says that you can make a comparison between B and C, Mayikola Maymor, what are you going to say about the fact that, you know, with the Bechor it involves blood and flesh and so on, so that we can't eat a Bechor today, right? So he says Dama Bosa Khadamilsahi, it's one thing, so that in that case the fact that you cannot sprinkle blood on the Mizbeach means also you cannot eat the flesh. So coming back to that theoretical case of where the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed right at the moment after he had sprinkled the blood and the flesh was there, it's one deal. So obviously it could not have been done over there, and it's only a theoretical question, not any practical question. Alright, but in the final analysis, as I say, to sum up again, we dealt with three different cases, right? One of them is Bechor, and we see the Bechor, to carry it out, needs the Beis HaMikdash because of the factor of Dam and Basar, right? The Bikurim, we cannot go and fill a basket with first fruits of Eretz Yisrael today and bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. There is no Beis HaMikdash. We can't bring it and put it down before the Mizbeach. So you can't do it. So that's out too. This in spite of the fact, incidentally, that aside for a moment, you know that the Chilonium, as we say, in other words, the secularists, many years ago, since they didn't believe in the Torah and they didn't know what to do with Shavuos, because what do we celebrate on Shavuos? It's a Mamak Torah. So what did they do? So they stressed Shavuos as being an agricultural festival, namely, you know, Yom HaBikurim or Chag HaBikurim, okay? And they developed a ceremony that the kids would dress up and bring baskets of fruit, and they would give it, I guess, to the head of the kibbutz or whatever it may be, right? Kibbutzah, whatever it may be. And, I guess it was supposed to go to the Jewish National Fund or whatever it was. But, you know, this is only imitation. A lot of from Jews were absolutely opposed to it because they said what they're trying to do is to reenact something which Basman HaZeh cannot take place, right? There are things that we're not allowed to do today because of the fact that they're intimately tied up with the Beis HaMikdash. For example, we are not allowed today to have a seven-branch candlestick, even though you find it around, okay? But why not? Because in the Beis HaMikdash there was a seven-branch candlestick. Oh. So you make a six-branch candlestick, an eight-branch candlestick, whatever it may be, and so on. But technically you're not allowed to have a seven-branch candlestick because of that, okay? Right. And then, of course, we cannot be neuter animals or anything like that. This is obvious. The minyan and kesher tonight. We eat, for example, the korban pesach in Yerushalayim b'sman hazeh. That's a big shayla. It's a big shayla. However, of course, we don't, because the fact is that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash in order to do it, and so we say it's prohibited. So, what do we prohibit during the seder night?
Plate.
Huh?
We don't have roast.
Right, David. They're not allowed to have the Seder, right, roast meat.
Did you eat the Korban Pesach?
Not even. We extended already to roast duck and roast chicken, too. But you're not allowed to have roast flesh on that night because this is a Zeicha L'Churban, okay? So that.
But you need the Korban Pesach.
Huh? The Korban Pesach had to be roasted. Okay?
No.
Put on a spit and broil.
Okay.
Or put in an oven and broil.
You say not allowed to eat,
Not the Seder.
Not the Seder.
Not the Seder.
So when do you eat the Korban Pesach then?
No. In Yerushalayim it was eaten.
All right.
What I'm saying is, for us, Bezman Hazeh, we're not allowed to do it because it's a Zeichel HaMikdash. Okay, it's something that was done in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore we're not allowed to do something which was an actual ritual connected to the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, in conclusion, as far as Ma'aser Sheni is concerned, which is what started the argument, right? Can we eat Ma'aser Sheni Rishalayim Bezman Hazeh? But they, so the answer is no. Okay. And as far as the argument of whether Kedusha Rishonah Kitcho Lashato Vikitcho Losad Lovey or not, this is still a question that is being debated back and forth. We have no final resolution because, as I pointed out to you, even though we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but still there is a certain amount of Kedusha in the land of Eretz Israel, and there are mitzvahs tluyas ba'aretz, mitzvahs that are dependent upon the fact that people are living in Eretz Israel and they are obligated to observe.
Do those mitzvahs.
Right. So, Amir Tzashem, we'll meet next week, and we'll continue from this point, your test, Umit Beis.
Okay. And where are we?
We're on the right. Yeah, we're up
third
the,
line.
The third line, fourth line, right. Koshe Kadoshim, okay? The Mishnah that they quote over here is, of course, the Mishnah that we had a few pages back. Okay, so let's look for a few moments where the last time was that we had our Mishnah.
Going back to the
gone a long way since, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, where did I lose the Mishnah? I see it.
You can hear the chapter, right?
Okay. No, Yud Zion.
Yud Zion.
Take a look at Yud Zion. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The Mishnah over there that we've been working on piece by piece, right? Said, Ho'echa Bikurim, right? If a person eats Bikurim, Achlekor Lehem, right? Before having recited the, and then of course we had the whole machlokes as to whether whether it's
the recitation of
Kriya Ma'akevis, Hanocha Ma'akevis, and we had different opinions about that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then after that, what's the next thing? Then it said, Kodshe Kadoshim Chutz L'Kloim, right? If you eat, you know, the most sacred offerings outside of the temple precincts itself. Now, of course, that, as we said, this is applied to the Kohanim who must eat the either the Chatas or the Oshem. These are holy offerings, okay? They have to eat it within the temple precincts. They can't take it outside, okay? That has to be eaten over there. Or Kochim Kalim and Masir Sheni Chutz L'Chayma. Or if it is Kochim Kalim, as for example, let's say the Todo, Shlomim, and so on, you could take it out of the temple and eat it within Yerushalayim. That you could do. But you could not take it where? Outside the wall of Yerushalayim. You couldn't take it outside Yerushalayim. Okay? And the same thing as we saw.
Take home and feed his family with it.
Yeah, right. But it had to be within Yerushalayim. If you didn't live in Yerushalayim, you came up there, then you had to find a place where to eat it over there. Okay? And then it says a Ma'aser Sheni, right? Chutz L'Chayma. This is what we were talking about, if you remember, correct? That if you eat, Ma'aser Sheni, again outside of Yerushalayim, and so on and so forth. Okay. So at any rate, what is the punishment? So the answer is, that the punishment would be like Arboim, right? That you get the 40 lashes, right? Like Arboim. Okay. So there we had that, Ho'echa Bikurim, and so on and so forth, and Koshim Kadoshim, Hutzlokoyim, and Koshim Kalam Asashem. Okay? So far, so good. Then, at the beginning of the chapter, which was on Yud Gimel, we'll turn back again over there. Going going down a few lines, we learned several weeks ago, we were discussing this particular Mishnah, it said over there, Ochal Tevel, if you ate Tevel, and remember again what is Tevel, Tevel is food from which Trumas Masris is not yet been taken, okay? Umaser Rishon, or if you ate Maser Rishon, because this would apply actually to the, originally to the Levi, right, who received that. And let's say he ate it, Shalot Nitro Trumose, from which Truma was not taken to be given to the Kohen, because the Levi has to take out a part, has to take out, that's what we call Trumas Maser, and he didn't do it, then in that case, obviously, right, what is he going to get? So he's going to get, you know, Malkus, right? And that, and in general, this was also included before where it said, Hatome Shochal Es HaHekdesh, right? That if a person is in a state of uncleanness, this is a little up before, a few lines above what I read, okay? Atome, right? Somebody who is unclean and he ate hektish. In other words, something which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, okay? Or the Habuel HaMikdash Tomei, if somebody comes into the Beis HaMikdash, even in and he's in a state of impurity and so on and so forth. Okay. So, in all of these cases, we learn that what is the punishment? The punishment is Malkus. Okay. So now, the Gemara continues, and it says, getting back there, okay? It says, Tanina Chalazimna. Hey, we've already learned way, way back in Yud Gimel, what? That Maaser Sheni, the Hektish Le Nivdu, that if a person eats either Maaser Sheni, remember what is Maaser Sheni again? This is the fruits and the stuff and so on he has to bring to Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim itself, or Hektish Shalai Nivdu. And of course, Maaser Sheni or Hektish, both of them would apply. Because Hektish, although it's a different ruling, but still there's a similarity between them. That's what I mean. Hektish, as we learned, is something that you dedicate to the Beis HaMikdash or somebody else dedicates to the Beis HaMikdash, okay? And then what happens? What happens is that they discover that it's not fit for consumption of Beis HaMikdash. Let's say it was an animal that was given, dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, okay? What happens if a womb is discovered in the animal? It cannot be offered up on the as a sacrifice, because Torah says specifically, called boom lo yeboi, right? They're not allowed to have any blemish whatever in the animal that you sacrifice, okay? So what did they do with this animal? One thing that they could do, what?
Well, if that's a boom, nobody could, even a Jew can eat it.
Well, actually, one thing that they could do, and that is, very frankly,
they could sell it to a guy.
They sell it. No, it could even be sold to a Jew. He pays the money that the temple treasurer assesses him for the value of the animal. You understand? He pays it. Then the animal is no longer hektish. But now it goes, as we would say, yetzel chulin. It is now chulin. In other words, it is now no longer holy. Right. I don't want to use the word profane, even though it's not a good translation. Okay?
But all that it means is simply it has a mum or a it shouldn't be it couldn't be used by a Jew anyway, right?
No, that's not so.
What do you consider a mum?
A mum could be a blemish externally. There's a blotch on his skin, something like that. Okay, or the eye doesn't look it doesn't look right. There's a blemish in there. There's a spot in the eye.
But that would
like
not make it unkosher.
Doesn't make it unkosher. Okay. You're thinking that the animal is treif. That's already a different story. Treif means that there is something wrong with the vital organs, and because of this defect in the vital organs, the animal is not going to survive. So that's treif.
What would they do in that case? If they sacrifice the animal, and they open it up and find out.
If they sacrifice and discover that it was treif.
Yeah. I mean, they don't see the
okay, then that's a good problem. The answer is that according to some the sacrifice becomes possible, okay?
Oh, yeah.
According to others, there is a way out. What is the way out? The Kohen Gadol had more begadim, right? He had more articles of clothing that he had to wear as compared to the Kohen Hedyot. It's compared to the ordinary Kohen who was not the Kohen Gadol. Okay. One of the things that he bore on his head is called the tzitz. What exactly is the tzitz? The tzitz was some kind of a gold plate, okay, which was attached to the mitznefes. It was attached to the turban that he wore on his head, and on this gold plate were written the words Kodesh Lashem, holy unto God, okay. And of course, when he raised his hands in blessing, he was not allowed to raise it higher than the tzitz. Okay? So, according to many authorities, they say that tzitz beratze, that if a sacrifice had already gone up on the altar, then the tzitz of the Kohen Gadol would be able to effect expiation for the fact, you know, that the korban was not what it should have been, right? Okay, so that way, right? Because it would be a very serious problem. Okay.
Sure.
But as I say, in many cases, they simply said it was possible. You have to what? Have to do it over again. Okay. Give another animal in place, you know, to replace the one that was no good. All right. But the point that I'm making is that hektish can be turned into chulin. In other words, it can be made unholy by virtue of the fact that it is sold. This is what we mean by redeemed. Okay?
And the money used.
It is sold, right? And the money is used for the temple treasury to do whatever the treasurer needs, geld in the Beis HaMikdash, in order to do it. It could be in order to buy more sacrifices. Because don't forget, the rule with the sacrifices is as follows. Those things that the Torah prescribes as being either the daily sacrifice, the Olas Tomid, okay, that we read about this morning, or the Musafim. What do I mean by Musafim?
The afternoon sacrifice.
Well, it's the additional sacrifices that would be offered either on Rosh Chodesh or Shabbos or the various days of Yontif, okay? Every day of Yontif, there was always Musafim. It's additional sacrifices. Those had to come Mishel Tzibor. In other words, it had to be purchased with public funds. It could not be a private donation. That cannot be a private donation. It represents the entire Klal Yisrael. It's for their benefit, and therefore it has to come Mishel Tzibor, from public funds that have been gathered together.
Uh-huh.
Now naturally, where did they get public funds? One of the major sources was the Matzis HaShekel that they collected. That every Jew was expected to contribute a half a shekel, okay? And that was used for that. But in addition, they also needed money for repairs to the Beis HaMikdash, and in order to buy other things, you know,
Hailing, whatever, yeah.
Right. It's like, for example, we have over here, the roof goes bad, we gotta do something in order to fix the roof. Air conditioning doesn't work, gotta do something with that. The same case, you know.
Yeah.
So even the Beis HaMikdash had expenses, okay? So, the money that went into the temple treasury could come also from the sale of Hekdesh. In other words, Hekdesh, the Pidio, or the Pidyoit, in other words, redeeming it from a state of holiness into a state of
the
holiness.
The word is Hekdesh?
Hekdesh. Hekdesh is in the word Kodesh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the word Hekdesh in Yiddish became... it became applied, you know, to a ruin, a wreck. Actually, originally it was supposed to be like, you know, the place where people would stay overnight. You know, the Oirach would come to town. They had no place where to lodge. So we go to a place that was called the Hekdesh. So, right. But the original idea behind Hekdesh was that this is a sanctified area. And it's, you know, for the benefit of the entire Klal Yisrael.
But it is the same word.
Yeah, it's the same word, absolutely. All right. So having said that, Torah now wants to know, why does it say before, right? Ma'isa sheni the hektish le'niftu. If a person ate either ma'isa sheni which had not been redeemed, because remember we learned that ma'isa sheni is going to spoil, what can the guy do? Sells it, and he takes the money to Yerushalayim, right? Well, that's also called pidyon, in other words, redemption, if you wish. Okay, that's the English translation of the word. Okay, right. So if he, the Mishnah said already before, So why did they have to repeat again over here that if you were going to eat kosher kadoshim and ma'aseh sheni and so on and so forth, why does they have to repeat it again? So Amar Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina, so he comes up with a genius answer. He says, Seifo, he says, this last Mishnah that we have over here is b'maaseh sheni tohor v'gavator. We're talking about the fact, remember it says that if a person eats ma'aseh sheni, mechutz lachoma, right? Outside the wall of Yerushalayim, yes. He does it, then in that case he gets ma'aseh, right? Okay. So, here we're talking about if a person eats ma'aseh sheni, which is pure, meaning that it belongs in Yerushalayim and it's 100% good. Or, we're talking about a person who is in a state of purity. And what does he do? Well, obviously, he eats ma'aseh sheni, that's no good, right? That's became tomei, you understand? Or he ate, he was pure, ma'aseh sheni was pure, but what was the tzorah? He ate it outside Yerushalayim, okay? Then in that case, he gets makas. See, right, the ka'achil chutz lachoma, right? Uh-huh. He ate it outside the wall of Yerushalayim, outside. But Reisha, the earlier Mishnah that we had on Yud Gimel, that deals with ma'aseh sheni tomei, the garbo tomei. We're talking there about either a person who, the ka'achile, Yerushalayim, okay? We're talking about there a person who came to Yerushalayim, and either he himself was not in a state of purity, and he ate ma'aseh sheni in Yerushalayim, or he was in a state of purity, but his ma'aseh sheni was not in a state of purity. Had been tomei, had been contaminated. Okay? So in that case, we're dealing, he says, with two different reasons, two different situations. This is the reason why we have two Mishnahs dealing with the same general thing. Now, Minolon, now we ask the following questions. How do we know? Now usually Minolon usually wants to know where do we have a source in the Torah for this prohibition, okay? So he says, Minolon, Mechayev Olecha Mishum Tumo, how do we know that a person who eats unclean Ma'aseh Sheni in Yerushalayim or vice versa,
or he's tummy,
he himself is tummy, right, and he eats ma'aseh sheni, how do we know that in that case that he's mechayiv, in other words that he deserves malchus, as his punishment malchus, how do we know that? So he says the Tanya, because we learn the Gemara in Yevamos. What does it say over there? It says Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says that when we have that declaration in the Torah which had to be said on the seventh day of Pesach, either at the end of the third year or at the end of the sixth year when Ma'aser Ani had to be given, right? And it says that not just Ma'aser Ani, I mean there it's in the section of Ma'aser Ani in the Torah, but in reality it refers to all the Ma'asers that he should have given. And it says over there, Lo biyarti mimenu b'tomei, I have not taken it out, that out of my own possession, and given it, in other words, in a state of tomei. And why does it say tomei? It says bein shani tomei v'hu tahor, and the word tomei means either, makes no difference. Either I am tomei and the miser is tahor, right?
Right.
Or bein shani tahor, or whether I am tahor, v'hu tomei, and the miser is tomei. Okay, so in other words, the word tomei, since it doesn't say, you know, anything else, then it means it makes no difference whether the person
or the
miser itself is tomei. The heichan musar l'achilo, and where do we find in the Torah that there's a specific law that says you're not allowed to eat it? So he said, any other day, you know what? I forgot for a moment.
Yeah.
At the moment, I don't know. Maybe he was interrupted with something or other. So then he recovers and he says, wait a minute. He says, Tumas Hagur Fehed Yaksiv. What do you mean? We have a specific pasuk which already speaks about the fact that if the guf is unclean, then specifically it cannot be eaten. Now, in this particular case, the goof in this case, actually, we would have to apply to the person, right? Why? Because what is the pasuk that he's choosing? He says, nefesh asher tigabo, the soul who touches it, in other words, who touches kosher, right? And of course, obviously, it doesn't mean simply touching, it means, you know, who eats kosher, okay? And it's in a state of purity, right? Impurity. V'toma ad ha'orev, then, and he remains tome until the evening. V'lo yurchal min ha'kodoshim, and he's not allowed to eat any of the kodshim while he's still in a state of uncleanness. So we know that. All right. I want to go back to Rashi, because Rashi is very important over here.
Okay.
Rashi is always important.
Particularly, yeah.
But we have to at times see, take a look and see what Rashi says. Okay. All right.
Which one do you
want to start? Well, we can start from the top. The first couple of lines, nothing too much. Okay. Hanichel says the man d'omer, according to the person who says, and the plutei b'zel mekom. All right. So then the parakei zel mekom and spoken. This is the machlokes. Okay. That that was a reference, if you remember, whether A, if we start with A, can we learn B from A? Okay. Then the question was, can we learn C from B or not? And we learned that there is a difference of opinion. Comparison. We can't. We have to have specific directions. Okay. So that's all that Rashi was saying over there. He says, Reisha b'masu sheni tomei. And this is, of course, you know, as we've been saying, that the original Mishnah, the one on Yud Gimel, speaks about masu sheni, which in itself is impure, because ochelei b'Yerushalayim plopadiyo. And what did he do? He ate it in Yerushalayim, he says, without having redeemed it. He should have redeemed what was unclean. Later we'll see again that they argue the point that can a person who brings Maaser Sheni into Yerushalayim and then it becomes Tameh, can he redeem in Yerushalayim? Because we learned before that Maaser Sheni can be redeemed up until he gets to Yerushalayim. It has to be redeemed outside. But it cannot be redeemed in Yerushalayim. Once it's in Yerushalayim, it has to be eaten by the person. Okay? But what if it becomes Tomei? So, in that case, we're going to learn that it can be redeemed even Yerushalayim. You can sell it and, use the money for something else. Okay? So it says, Hochi Gatsin. This is the way we have to read the text. It says, Veheichon Mutra Lachila. Where are we warned concerning eating shelo yochlena b'tumah, that we're not allowed to eat it in the state of tumah? He said, "Eini yodea." You know, I don't know. He says. So then he says, "Talmud lo mar lo suchal." Oh, wait a minute. The pasuk says lo suchal that kol bisharecha. Right, you're not allowed to eat within. In this case, bisharecha over here means any place outside of Yerushalayim. We have to understand in that case. In other words, in your own private domain. Not allowed to eat in your own private domain. Masar de Gomcho, de Roshcho, de Tzorech, this is what the Pasuk says. You know, he doesn't quote the whole Pasuk, but this is what the Pasuk says. Okay, so Kachi Shnuya B'Sifri. The Sifri has this version. Ukshek Ba'uha Khan, but when they decided to place it in this particular context over here in Marcus, says Rashi, Lo is pika de gomra. They didn't have a chance to put in the rest of the pasuk. Are the ekshe gemara? Because they were interrupted by somebody who wants to ask a kasha on the gemara. Okay. So he answers what? Tumas haguf. He says behed yuksiv. Right. That a personal tumah. This is written specifically. Right. Ksivbe. Why? Because it says, "V'lo yochal min hakodoshim." He's not allowed to eat any of the holy things. Kiyim rochatz, right? Unless he bathes himself in water, right? In other words, he has to go and immerse himself in the mikveh, right? And in Gemara Mevomis, they apply it. What is the kachim in this particular case? They apply it to Maaser. Okay? Bidichsiv, since it is written over there, Kiyim Rochatz, that he has to bait. Ha Rochatz Tahor. Right? If he bait, then he's in the state of cleanliness. The Toval, because he immersed himself. The Olo, right? And then he went up. So, Ochel B'Maser. In that case, then he can eat Maser if he has already, immersed himself in the mikveh. Actually, this is not the whole story. Because what does the Pasuk over there say, the one that they were quoting? The Pasuk over there says, right? The Lo Yochal Min HaKodeshim, right? Nefesh Shet Higah B'Kol HaKodeshim Nefesh Shet Higah B'Kol HaKodeshim. Then, Tomoad Ha'orav, right? And he remains in the state of Tumah until the evening, right? And and then it's written, he has to bathe himself and so on. And then it says Tomoad Ha'orav, he still remains in the state of Tumah until the evening, right? And then what happens? Then it says Uvoa HaShemesh V'Toher. That when the evening comes, then he becomes clean. In other words, he's still in suspended state of tumah, even though he's already gone into the mikveh in the afternoon, and he still can't eat until the evening comes. Of course, we use this when we learn brachas in order to try to figure out, what is the earliest time we can say Krishna at night, right? You remember the first Mishnah over there? It starts in the Mosai Korin Shema B'Arvitz. When do we read Shema? Either B'Arvitz or B'Arvitz, you have two different readings. But Mishosha Kohanim Nechnesim Lechol B'Trumasod. This is what it said over there. You can't do it any earlier than the time when the Kohanim go in order to eat Truma. And then they quoted over here, because it's written about Shemesh V'Toher, you see. So, this is part of the story over there. But at any rate, getting back over here, what are they trying to prove at this particular point? That a person who is unclean may not eat Kodesh. And Kodesh includes, according to Gemara and Yevamos, also Maaser. Not allowed to eat Maaser, okay? In other words, the Maaser Sheni that he brings to Yerushalayim has now acquired, once it's in Yerushalayim and it's Tohor, it acquires Kedusha. And since it has acquired Kedusha, then he can only eat it in the state of cleanliness.
Purity.
Okay? So this is what we've established over here. Okay? What? Can you eat Hektish at night? If the Hektish were redeemed, in other words, it's Yotze L'Chulin, it's no longer Hektish. They paid the value that was assessed by the Gizbor, by the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash, right? And so now it's Chulin. Chulin, you can eat. Okay, you can eat it for supper, you can eat it for dinner, whatever you want, right? Breakfast.
Shall we present?
Pardon me?
Hektish means unredeemed, it is redeemed.
Hektish means that it is still sacred. So to get it out of the state of sacredness, if it is something that is not an animal which has no blemish, in that case you can't get it out of Hektish. That animal has to be offered up as a sacrifice on the altar, you understand? But, this is why I said, for example, an animal that developed a blemish. But Hektish could be other things too. Only since we're talking about eating, so this is the case. But let's say that a person, dedicated, let's say, a silver spoon to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? So he did that. Well, it's not going to be used in the Beis HaMikdash, but it becomes part of the Hektish. It becomes part of the sacred treasury, if you wish. Okay? I'm trying to give, all kinds of meanings, to the word Hektish. It comes part of the temple, the Beis HaMikdash trust, okay? All right. Now, let's say this person says, wait a minute, I gave a very valuable one because I wanted the Beis HaMikdash to make some money. but I would like to get that spoon back again. Okay? So in that case, comes to the treasurer and he says, I dedicated this spoon and I want to redeem it. So the treasurer says, okay, I'll figure out, you know, with my assessors how much the spoon is worth, and then we have to assess another 20%, which is a donation to the Beis HaMikdash, okay, and you can have it back. Well, once he's paid the amount that they assess and the 20% in addition,
then it's no longer
Komish, as they say, in the, you know, then in that particular case, he can use the spoon for whatever he wants, because it's no longer Hekdash, it's no longer temple property. You understand? So that's essentially what Hekdash implies. It's temple property, in whatever form it may be. Okay? A person can also dedicate a field. Let's say, I dedicate my field to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? Well, obviously, the Beis HaMikdash isn't going to take over his field necessarily, but they'll say, okay, we're going to send our assessors and figure out how much it is, and then it goes on the market. You want to redeem it? You've got first pick, but you got to pay the addition, okay?
Yeah,
if not, then we could sell it to anybody that we want to.
Sure.
But they always give, you know, first pick to the person who dedicated it. Right. Of course, they understand. I mean, why does he dedicate? He dedicates because he wants to do something on behalf of the Beis HaMikdash. That's why. Okay. All right.
So on Rashi or?
Yeah. Okay. Now, here Rashi has in parentheses, it says, Rabbeinu. You know what? He says, we had a quotation, and I don't know exactly, but it's an interesting comment that he puts in over here. He says, Rabbeinu says, Gufo Tohor, right? Rebbe. In other words, by that I guess he means Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who was the redactor of the Mishnah, right? So his body was pure, v'yotze nishmoso b'taro, and his soul went out, you know, in other words, he expired in purity, okay? Actually, this is what we learned in the Gemara, for example, about Rabbi Akiva, when he died. Remember, it's a martyr at the hands of the Romans,
right.
Said, Gufa Noki,
right, yeah.
Gufa Tohor, Yotzen Nishmoso B'Tohor, and so on. So, he's saying the same thing about Rebbe. So he says, Lo Pirash Yersimikon. So he did not explain, he didn't carry on any further than this, but Mekan Ve'elach. Lo Perish Yosef, he didn't do any more. But Mekan Ve'elach, from this point on, Lashon Talmidei Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nosson. Then we have now the words of his Talmid, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nosson. Okay. So, at any rate. All right. So, then what did he say when he said, Einu Yodei? He says, Kachu Lishon Abraisa. You know what? I'm only quoting to you the language of the Baraisa. Kolomer. In other words, Eini Yodea, I don't know Lehechem Musa Lechach, right? In other words, the Baraisa is saying, I don't know, where do we find a prohibition for this, where we warned, you know, not to eat Miser in a state of uncleanliness, right? So Talmud Lomar. So then they come up with the answer that the pasuk says, "Lo suchal, you are not allowed to eat." The hashas lo shovik le lasuke milse, and the Gemara did not permit him to continue with what he was saying. Ela kodim uforak, but they already asked the question. Mitama amayko amar eni yudea, and you know that's still a problem. Why did he say I don't know? Obviously he did know because it says ho tumas haguf. After all, uncleanliness of a person, behedik siva, it's written specifically, nefesh asher tigabo, right? That any soul that touches it, and we've already learned before, several pages back, that nefesh asher tigabo means eating, not just plain touching something, but it means eating, you know, something which is sacred. Lo yochal min hakadoshim, right? It's not eat kim rochatz v'sor b'mayim, right? Yamim b'yivomis. And in Gemara, the Yevamah says the high crow that this pasuk is b'maisel sheni komar, the toval viola ochel, that if he immersed himself and then he got out of the mikvah, in that case he's permitted to eat. All right. So yeah. Anyway, let's get back over here. So, now they say, Ela Tumas Atzmo Minayim. How do we know that if the object itself was Tomei, that we're not allowed to eat it, right? This same. So we have a pasuk for that too. What does the pasuk say? The pasuk says, Lo Suchal Lechol Bishorech. You're not allowed to eat in your own precincts. What? Masa de Gondchot, the Rosh Vitzurech, etc., etc., etc. Okay? Cannot do it except in the state of purity and except in the state of where? In Yerushalayim. Well, the Halon who Omer, and afterwards it says, Bishorecha Techlenu Hatome Vator, right? That you are allowed to eat in your gates, in other words, in your homes, right? Hatome Vator, whether you are clean or unclean. Okay. So the question is, what is the latter referring to? So Rashi explains. He says, the Halon who Omer, right, just a little above, to the left over there, right? Says, we're talking over here about Bechor Balmo. We're talking over here about a Bechor. Bechor, remember, means a firstborn male animal, right? And what about it? So, if it developed a blemish, as we said, and you know, this blemish is what we call a blemish, a mum kabua, in other words, it's a permanent blemish, right? Then what can you do? Then in that case, shenifta. It has to be redeemed. In other words, you sell it for geld. Okay? So, bisharecho tochlenu. You're allowed to eat it in your own home. Because otherwise, what is the din for a bechor? Bechor has to be eaten by the kohen in the Beis HaMikdosh if it is, you know, a perfectly good animal. It's without a mum. Okay? Right. Above, you know, in other words, before the business about the Bechor, it says that if there is any. Okay. And not only that, but we see that it says, Hatomei v'hatohor, right? Whether you're clean or unclean, which means that once the Bechor is no longer holy, then what can we do with it? We can eat it. We can eat it. You can eat it wherever you want to.
Yeah, inside out.
Right. Okay. Now, obviously, first pick would still be to the coin, but he can't eat it as a sacrifice. However, if it was nifta, in other words, it was redeemed, it was sold.
Then you could eat it.
Yeah. I mean, the coin, right, exactly, then in that case, it could be eaten by somebody else. But however, I have to tell you, there are other prohibitions that must be observed. Because in the same place where it says Kol HaBechor Asher Yivoleh B'Kocha HaZochor, right, any Bechor which will be born among your cattle, in this case it includes, you know, cattle, sheep and goats, okay, if it's a male, Tak Yishlo L'Shem HaTechi, you have to make it holy unto the Lord your God, right, it's dedicated to God, and then it's written right after that Lo Sa'avod Bechor Sharecho. You're not allowed to use a firstborn ox for plowing, for doing work with. Of course, the most common work would be plowing. Right. But anything that you're using it for, let's say even to carry a burden on it. Let's say you decided that you want to
pull a wagon.
Whatever. Not allowed to do it. The lo so goes b'chor tzonecha. Nor are you allowed to shear the sheep of the flock. And these two prohibitions apply to a Bechor even after it has been redeemed. All that you can do with the Bechor is to shecht it and to eat it. Okay.
Excuse me, what's the word you use for
Nifta? Yeah. Right, right. Nifta means it was redeemed, right? Okay. Yeah. Huh? No, I didn't say Nifta, I said Nifta.
Nifta.
Yeah, chas v'shom. You mean the shore was nifter? Nifter means literally redeemed. This is the technical term that we use for it. Okay, obviously, how do you redeem it? You sell it, exactly. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So, the Tanya, And we learned likewise another baraisa, Devei Rabbi Yishmael, among the school of Rabbi Yishmael, where they say, what does the pasuk Hatomei V'Hatohor imply? Give a different meaning to it. It says, Afilu Tomei V'Tohor Ochlin B'Ka'ora Achas V'Yein Choshishin. They say, even one who is unclean and the person who is clean, they are allowed to eat from the same shissel, from the same bowl, and we're not worried. Now again, what are we applying this to? So, back to Rashi. Afilu Tomei V'Tohor. He says, the Afal Gav, that even though the also the Gizo of Avoda, that it is, you know, that the Bechor is prohibited from being sheared for its wool, if it's a sheep, of course, or for labor, if it is an ox, Kedam Rinun, right? Bechor Avas, Nav Shechor, Tizbach, V'Yachalta Basor, that if you feel like eating meat, right, you are permitted to shecht and to eat meat, Tizbach, you're allowed to shecht. In this case, I'm translating tizbach not as sacrifice, but as shecht. Okay? Velo giza, however, that does not apply to the shearing of the wool. Right? V'yochalta, and the pasuk says, and you can eat, but velo lichlecho, you're not allowed to throw this meat to your dogs. In other words, it has to be treated respectfully, because it was at one time considered kosher, considered holy, right? Basar, you can eat meat, but below cholov, it doesn't mean over here not allowed to eat milkshakes with fleishakes, which would be the first thing that we might think of, but what it means is you're not allowed to milk, although frankly I can't figure out how a male is going to be milked. All right, so I'll take it. You're not allowed. You can eat the meat, but you're not allowed to have milkshakes with it. Okay.
I don't want to get involved.
Pardon me? Yeah, but a female animal cannot be a bechor. Bechor has to be hazochor, has to be a male. That's why I'm a little bit puzzled by what this Rashi is over here that they quote in the Gemara, you understand? Rashi is quoting a baraisa, okay?
A goat
is the same thing as a sheep or a calf, you understand? It's the same thing. It applies to an ox. Okay, when I say ox, I mean, I don't mean necessarily an older one, because there's Gemara in Bechor, this is a Masechta Bechoras, which says that ideally the ox should be eaten within the first year if it's born. It's big enough and tasty enough that it can be eaten, okay? The Kevis and the A's, they're given one or two more years, because it takes time for them to grow into something, you know, that it's worthwhile eating, okay? So there is this time limitation given that, in other words, because if they didn't put a time limitation, a guy is liable to say, well, eventually I'll get around to it, right? But, you know, what happens in the case of eventually I'll get around to it? It doesn't happen, period. So therefore, that's why they gave a time limit over there. Okay. At any rate, yes, all right, so we're in the Rashi over here.
Yeah.
All right. And yeah, so he says, Apilo Hochi, nevertheless, even though we have all these restrictions, namely not to shear it, right, not to throw it to the dogs, but nevertheless, Tomei V'Toher Ochlin Oso B'Korachas, whether a person is unclean or clean, they're permitted to eat it out of one shissel, right? Then they are cholim betumas haguf, because they may be eaten when a person is in a state of uncleanliness. Betumas atzman, and also if the thing itself is unclean, the kevan the tomei oichel bohen, because if a tomei is permitted to eat it, hainu betumas haguf oichel hatohar, right? Then it means that the Tohor is also, he's eating something, and he himself would be like eating in a state of impurity. Because if he's eating the same food, then obviously it's going to make him unclean. Right. Shatohor ochel imo le'achna shenogabo, and therefore when the tohor, the person who's clean, eats it together with the guy who is unclean, after he had already touched it, after the other guy had touched it, so hainu tohor ochel tumas hatzpoy, then the tohor is going to eat in a state, you know, where the thing itself became tummy. She ochel esatomi, he ate tummy. So it proves that what? That once the animal has been redeemed, then in that case, it loses its state of sanctity, except for the things that we said
can't
you
it.
Can't do with it.
Yeah, you
okay.
can't take a wall, you can't make a beast of burden out of it.
Yeah. All right, we'll work a little bit more, and then we'll call it a night, okay?
Go back to the Gemara.
Yeah. All right, so back to the Gemara. Right. So, right? All right. The Koma Rachmona in the Torah says, hey, we're just about halfway down.
Will you see what it says, Amar, on the right?
Yeah.
All right, just about a line below
I'm
that.
I say something that sometime an animal had broken its stomach. You ever hear about that?
Yes, absolutely. That's a question of the shech, the animal, of course, and there's milk inside. Well, all right. Okay. Usually we'd refer to a female animal rather than a male animal.
Yeah.
All right. I'll accept it. Yeah, maybe he had a drink of milk and so there's tummy right now. Okay.
All right.
All right. The Kama Rachmana, and the Torah said, hey, Tommy the Shori Loch, Gabi Tohor. Awesome. Okay, look, I gave you permission in the case of the Bechor, right, which we said became Tommy. So I gave you permission that what? That the Tommy and the Torah could both eat together from the same pot, right, from the same bowl. Mm-hmm. That's okay over there. But Hocha, but here, in the case of what? In the case of Maaseh Sheni, lo sechol, there is no such permission given. Maaseh Sheni, in other words, can only be eaten in Yerushalayim and can only be eaten by a person who is tohor, and the food itself also has to be tohor. U'menalon, and how do we know, Devar Pediyahu, that if something happens that Maaseh Sheni can be redeemed beforehand, right? The Omer Rabbi Elazar, as Rabbi Elazar said, Minayin leMaaseh Sheni shenitmar shepodin oso. How do we know that if Maaseh Sheni became unclean, that you can redeem it? Now, of course, what we're talking about over here is what I mentioned a little bit earlier,
right.
Namely, it became unclean in Yerushalayim, right?
Right.
So how do we know then that the rule is that you can redeem it in Yerushalayim, Afilu Yerushalayim, he says, right? Talmud Lomar, because the Pasuk says, Kilo Sukal Se'esau, because you're not allowed literally to carry it. The Ein Se'es, but he says, you know, the word Se'es has another implication. He says, Ein Se'es Lachila. That means you're not allowed to eat it. Shenemar, as we have a Pasuk, in Bereishis, where it says Vayisa Masais Beyes Panov, this is in reference to Yosef, who has his brothers home, in his home, remember? And of course they're scared out of their wits, they don't know what's doing, but then what does he do? He feeds them. So in that case, then we have to say Masos, you see, this proves that he gave them a good dinner, and therefore Tilo Suchal Seiso replies to what? It applies to eating. That you must eat, as we said, in a state of purity. The food has to be pure, has to be in Yerushalayim, the Maaseh Sheni, and if not, then the rule is that you're allowed to redeem it, even in Yerushalayim, and make a kulin as a result of it, right? And you'll use the money instead in order to buy food, which is tohu, and eat that in place of it. All right, I think we'll stop at this particular point. And okay, so here's where we are. So next week we'll start with Bibi.
Bibi.
Omer Rab Bibi.
Omer Rab Bibi. Okay. Omer Rab Bibi. So. So we'll be
Erev Tishrei.
Wait, I forgot.
So next, we'll meet next Tuesday.
We'll meet next Tuesday.
After davening.
Right.
We'll start with the same.
Rav
Bibi.
Yeah, I'm a Rav Bibi.
Yid Tes Amud Beis.
Yeah.
All right, we're on Amud Beis.
Yes, we're on Amud Beis. Yid Tes Amud Beis. Tonight is Tuesday night, the 23rd, if I'm not mistaken. 23rd. July already. Right. Okay. So, as we heard in a little summary before, the discussion was as to Maaser Sheni, okay? And we're still continuing a little bit yet on the theme of Maaser Sheni. And as we say, the question is as to whether Maaser Sheni can be eaten in the state of uncleanness, or if Maaser Sheni became unclean, what is the din in that particular case? And then we question as what happens in Yerushalayim. Now the reason for all these things is as follows. All right, let me just indicate briefly what the problem is. Okay, we see that Maaser Sheni, which means the tithe that has to be consumed in Yerushalayim, and it consists of grain products,
fruit,
wine, oil, these things are enumerated in the Torah, and people are supposed to come to Yerushalayim, take roughly about a tenth of what has grown during the course of the year, along these lines that we indicated, and bring it to Yerushalayim and enjoy it over there, they and the entire family and so on. And the only qualifications are that it has to be eaten, that's according to the Torah, right? Has to be eaten within the walls of Yerushalayim, okay? Because that's the place which God has chosen. And you have to rejoice, lifnei Hashem lekecha. So marked lifnei Hashem lekecha. Rejoice before the Lord your God. Naturally, where is before the Lord your God? So that would be in Yerushalayim, okay? But we also learned another law, and that law is as far as redeeming Maaser Sheni. The rule is that either kilo suchal se'eso, the words that we just heard before, which means literally because you cannot bring it over there, you cannot carry it over there, ki yirchak mimcha ha'mokum, because the place is too far from you. So then it says nasalta ba'kosef, then you exchange it
for money,
as you sell it for money, v'tzata kesef b'yotcho, and then you have to literally tie up
money.
The money in your hand, and you have to bring it to Yerushalayim, and there, of course, you spend it. Whatever your heart desires over there, bakor, matzot, cattle, sheep, yayin, sheikhor, wine, schnapps and beers, and things like that. Anything that you want, you can use with that money, but it has to be bought in Yerushalayim and eaten in Yerushalayim. So this is what the Torah says. Now, what they have established is that inasmuch as Maaser Sheni is commanded from the Torah, therefore the food of Maaser Sheni thereby has to assume a hallowed state. Now what do I mean by hallowed state? In other words, it has to be consumed in Yerushalayim, and it has to be in a state of purity. This is what we talked about last week about Tumas Atzmo. It cannot, the object itself cannot be unclean, right? And it also has to be a guf tahor. You cannot eat it with a guf tameh. In other words, the person himself who eats it has to be also in a state of purity, which means that before he goes to Yerushalayim, he has to go and immerse himself in the mikveh in order to be able to eat it in a state of purity. Okay? Now, the question is twofold, okay, about redemption of Maaser Sheni. Can Maaser Sheni be redeemed in Yerushalayim? The answer is no. Once it enters within the walls of Yerushalayim, then it cannot be redeemed anymore, because it has become sanctified, so to speak, by virtue of being in Yerushalayim. And so therefore, it has to be consumed in Yerushalayim. You cannot redeem it. Okay? But we learned that Ma'aser Sheni could be redeemed as long as you haven't been yet in Yerushalayim. You could do it outside of Yerushalayim. Okay? So if you hadn't brought the food into Yerushalayim, then there's no question that it can be redeemed. Based on the pasuk, you know, kilo suchal says, so literally you can't carry it over there, can't bring it. Why? For whatever reason it may be. Too far, this, that, and so on. You're afraid of the thing will spoil and so on, so you can redeem it outside. But the new thing that we added last week was a statement a couple of lines before Rabbi Bibi. So let's go. You see that asterisk over there, about four lines up from Rabbi Bibi. Okay, right. The Omer Rabbi Elazar, because Rabbi Elazar said, "Minayin l'maisa sheni shenitma." How do we know that? What if maisa sheni became unclean, and it was in Yerushalayim that it happened? Somehow, rather, let's say it came in contact with a corpse or a sheretz. You know what a sheretz is? A reptile or a creeping creature or something like that, you know. And it came in contact with it so that it became unclean. So in that case, Rabbi Elazar established the following. He says, how do we know that the Ma'aser Sheni became unclean? Shepodin also, that we're allowed to redeem it, afilu b'Yerushalayim, even in Jerusalem. Okay? And he based it, he says, Talmud Loma, because the Pasuk says, Kilo Suchal Se'eso, this is the last thing that you heard on the tape before, namely, you cannot, as I said, Se'eso means carry it, but he gives a new twist to the word. What is the new twist? He says, Se'eso means because you can't eat it. Since it's unclean, you can't eat it over there. Then Se'eso L'Achilo, he says, you know, the word Se'eso implies eating in this case. Shenemar, as it is written, Vayusa Masas Be'esponov, as I said, it's a quotation from the story of Yosef and his brothers, that, you know, what did he do? He invited them to a great big feast, so that therefore Masas implies eating, feasting, and so on and so forth. So, along comes now Omer Rabbi Bibi. Okay, we're ready for him.
About halfway down.
Got it?
Yeah.
All right. Omer Rabbi Bibi. So Rabbi Bibi said, Omer Rav Asi, the name of Rav Asi, says, Benayan, how do we know that L'maisa Sheni Tohor, that if the Maisa Sheni is in a state of purity, it's clean, that we can still redeem it even if it is only one footstep outside of Yerushalayim. In other words, you're still not actually within Yerushalayim, but just let's say a foot outside the wall, that you're permitted to redeem it as long as it still has not entered in Yerushalayim, is the idea, right? So Shenemar, he says, and he derives it also from the same thing, Kilo Suchal Se'eso, right?
Yeah.
That you cannot carry it, literally, okay? So if you cannot carry it, it means that for some reason or other you decide, you know, just before you got to Yerushalayim, that you just can't bring it in and you want to redeem it. So as long as you haven't gone into Yerushalayim, you can still redeem the Ma'aser Sheni, as we said, by selling it and taking the money in with you to Yerushalayim and spending it over there, okay? So the question is, hi, Meboile, look, we just quoted it a couple of lines before about the name of Rabbi Elazar, and how did he interpret it? He interpreted the fact that we're talking about, let's say, so, food that has to be, that is Ma'aser Sheni, that has to be eaten in Yerushalayim, but it's in a state of impurity, and so it has to be redeemed even in Yerushalayim. So, can you take the same pasuk?
Use
it for two different tanoim, you know, for two different rabbis, and each one a different
interpretation.
So, Rav Asi says, Im Kain, and of course, this is Rav Bibi quoting Rav Asi, right?
Yeah.
So he says, Im Kain, if that's the case, then Lema Kra, let the Torah say specifically, Lo Sukhal Liochlo. Do not, you cannot eat it. And specifies the word lochlo to eat it. Everybody sees the word lochol, and everybody knows that the word means eat. Barasa eso. When normally does the word say so mean to eat? It's only an interpretation that was given by Rabbi Elazar in order to apply it to eating, right? So why does it say specifically you cannot eat it? So maisa eso, Why does then the Torah say to Esau to carry it? V'yeimor. Now let me say that kulei lohochi huda also, that maybe this is the interpretation that we should apply it to, and not what Rabbi Elazar said. Let's still apply it just to what Rabasi said. So he says, in Cain, if that's the case, let the Torah say, lo suchal litlo, you shouldn't take it into Yerushalayim. In other words, you know, the fact that as long as it's outside of Yerushalayim, has not yet been brought into Yerushalayim, then in that case you could still
redeem it,
even if it's only a footstep away from the walls of Yerushalayim. My say Esau. So why does the Torah say not to take it, but why does it say Esau, which means literally to carry it? So he says, Shmamina Tarti. So, in other words, this pasuk actually teaches two teachings, both Rabbi Elazar's teaching and also Rabbi, in the name of Rabasi. Namely, that Esau means, first of all, that food which becomes impure in Yerushalayim can be redeemed over there. And secondly, if you haven't hit Yerushalayim yet, you didn't get into the city, then you still, even if it is Tahor, you can still sell it and redeem it and use the money instead in Yerushalayim. So, okay, God's fine. Mm-hmm. Right, so now we continue. Rona, I see you have your finger on the place. Yeah.
So, I mean, they're not arguing one another about it. Really not, there's no argument.
We solved the argument.
There was no argument.
Well, one takes the pasuk and he interprets it eating, and the other one takes the pasuk and he says it means bringing it, carrying it. So, it's carrying the same as eating.
Well, one is outside and one is inside. So, there's two different
without
situations.
Without arguing
it's
about
not
that
apples
point.
And apples.
Correct.
It's an orange.
Okay, not arguing that point. But, boy, there's only that. If we have one pasuk, can you stretch it this way and can you stretch it the other way? The answer, yeah. So we'll stretch it for this and for that. Okay.
At that point, yes.
Both, as we said, you know, whether is it permitted to redeem it as long as you didn't get into Yerushalayim, even though it's Tahor? Yes. If it became Tomei in Yerushalayim, can you redeem it even in Yerushalayim, whereas Tahor cannot be redeemed in Yerushalayim, must be eaten instead? The answer is yes. So we'll accept them both. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Now the Gemara continues and says, Yativ Rav Chanina Rav Hoshio. Rav Chanina Rav Hoshio was sitting. The Komibai Elohu Apischad Yerushalayim Ma. And they were asking the following question: what if a guy was just within the doorway of Yerushalayim? Just got in the gate.
Right.
What is the din of that case? Now, incidentally, if you will take a look at the Rashi, he has a slightly different reading over there. He says over there that it's all the way down. You know, you see where it gets white on the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay, the middle of the third line verse.
Okay.
You see, Savar Abchanid
Right.
Rashi reads it, and by the way, I'll come back to that in 1 second. He reads it that it was Rav Chanina and Rav Oshia was sitting in the gate of Yerushalayim when they asked this question, the Komibayim. Okay? Not exactly what the text that we have over here says, which says simply that they asked what happens if at the entrance to Yerushalayim. Okay. So I just want to point out. But I call it Rashi. In reality, we had a Rashi that we read last week, which I interpreted a little differently than the way I should have interpreted it, okay? The reason being, because normally if we have Rabbeinu means normally Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, okay? And I had applied it to the framing of the Mishnayos, the framing of the, you know, the discussion and so on and so forth. But in thinking it over, I realized that there's a different meaning over here. I'm talking right over here right now. Okay, let's go up in the Rashi. Down up to about approximately, let's say, okay, you see where it narrows down, the Rashi on the left, okay?
Yeah.
This was a discussion last week where it says, you know, Gemara says, we have a pasuk specifically saying that if a person is tamei in his own body, in other words, a person is physically tamei, right, then he's not allowed to eat any of the holy food, because it's written, v'lo yoichal min ha-kodeshim, kiim rachatz, you know, he cannot eat any of kodeshim unless he actually tevels himself in the mikveh. And then, as I added, which is not quoted over here, but he has to wait also until the evening, because only at that time can he eat kodeshim. Okay, this is, we learned at the beginning of brachos, that this
well,
is
won't be,
right.
He won't be good
right.
Until that time.
Yeah. And then the Rashi over there says, "Makinun lo biyavomus," and we learn the yavomus b'maaser, that we applied it to maaser sheni, you know, the fact not to eat, what? You know, not to eat in a state of impurity. So the Gemara in yavomus applies it specifically to maaser sheni. Midichsiv, because it's written, "Kim rochatz," right? Rochatz tohor. V'toval v'yolo oichu b'maaser. And then it says, Rabbeinu, you see in the parenthesis over there.
Yeah.
Rabbeinu, gufo tohor, v'yotza nishmosa b'tavro. All right? Which I had interpreted as referring to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. But in rethinking this, I realized that actually what the text is implying over here, he says that at this particular point, our rabbi, who is our rabbi? The answer is Rashi.
Rashi.
All right. Gufo tahor, his body was pure, the yotzei nishmoso b'tahara, and his soul departed in purity. Like I told you, I mean, this was also mentioned in connection with you know, the martyrs of Israel, gufo tahor and yotzei.
The ten martyrs.
Right, ten martyrs and so on. So he says, lo perash yosef mekan, lo perash yosef. He did not comment any further than this point. In other words, he passed away when he reached this particular point of this commentary to Marcus. Okay, the Kanva Eilech, from this point on, then it's Lashon Talmidei Rabbi Yehuda Bar Avnosson. The rest of the commentary on Marcus is actually written by his disciple Rabbi Yehuda Bar Avnosson. Okay. And as the footnote says on the left, if you see in the margin, Vehu Chasono Shel Rashi. Not only was his disciple, but also he married Rashi's daughter. He was a son-in-law to Rashi. So I'll still continue, nevertheless, to use the word Rashi, because it's easier for us to identify that when we see this column over here, it's always Rashi. Okay?
When did he die? What year?
1100.
Somewhere at that time. I don't know if it's exactly 1100 or what. I'd have
he
to look
died
that
after
up
the Rambam, didn't he? He died a little bit later.
Rambam lived later than Rashi. But I have to say also, I don't know whether the Rambam is even familiar with Rashi.
He lived
for
in
the simple
countries.
Reason, right, you see, the Rambam grew up in Spain
and
then after that he went to, you know, to first to North Africa and then to Egypt, okay?
Yeah.
It's Morocco too for some time, was the first. Mm. Okay? Whereas, you know, Rashi was in France, so generally speaking, those who were, and when I say France, I mean northern France, I don't mean southern France, because southern France was in intimate contact
with Spain.
With Spain.